She's lying at the border. He never made it to the phone, so they had to let her go. Free from tyranny, at last just across the border, gently holds a cameo. Now the two of them are home, and these lives for a line. Ties are strong with the time. You've got to make up your mind. Find a reason why. In these moments you find what you hold in your mind. Your perception of time. Your perception of time moves painfully slowly when you're not quite home.
Machines without being hassled by the man. Yeah. And we want to get loaded.
Yeah. On Fridays from 1 till 2 p.m., prepare to get your jeans dirty. Join me, Bobby the Badger Ferris, for the greasier side of rock and roll, rhythm and blues, and country. From Hank to the Helicopters, from Otis to the Oblivions, it's the perfect way to slither into your weekend.
We won't talk about the habits, just the music and the man.
That's The Barn Burner every Friday from 1 till 2 p.m. only on CITR 101.9.
Sexy and Van City Radio may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
I'm Walter Cronkite. I'd like you to hear something.
Any way you want it, that's the way you need it. Any way you want it.
They're radio hams, amateurs, giving of their own time and spending their own money.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Your volunteer-run station.
They're just two average guys who saw the need and volunteered.
I'm at war. I'm at war with myself. I'm at war with you. I'm at war with everybody. That's why I don't do drugs. Because I don't want to be numb. I want to feel the pain. I want the clarity of the challenge. I want to win. I want to kick in the head. I want to tear the throat box out. I want to smash in the lungs. I want to kick in the rib cage. I want to split the spine. And I want to use your phone, make love to your wife, sister, eat your dog, and leave your house with a good cassette.
CITR 101.9 FM, where there's just a little bit of Kim Fowley in each and every one of us.
No. I don't think so.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Center offers support services to survivors of sexual assault and other forms of violence, as well as their friends, family members, and partners. They are committed to education and the support of students, staff, faculty, and visitors of all genders. They offer counseling, accompaniments, information, and referrals. They also facilitate specialized workshops and training sessions, develop public education campaigns, and hold special events related to anti-violence work. All services are free and confidential. For more information on programs and services or on volunteer opportunities, visit their website, www.ams.ubc.ca/SASC.
It's time to get weird. Weird 3 is a double-stage multi-city music marathon curated by Weird Canada, recently named by CBC Radio 3 as the best indie music website in the country. This traveling caravan features 19 emerging Canadian bands in an explosive happening of audible euphoria. Red Mass, Dirty Beaches, Gobble Gobble, Weird Visions, The Famines, Long Long Long, Hobo Cubes, Femininelli, Velvet Chrome, Feral Children, Silver Dapple, Ketamines, Makeout Videotape, Manic Tracks, Roll Mock, Needles Pins, and Babysitter. It's all going down Sunday, May 22nd at the Waldorf Hotel. Doors at 5:30, music starts at 6. Tickets are available from Zoo Shop on Main Street and online at wyrdiii.eventbrite.com.
Thanks, Val. That was Val, Folk Oasis, keeping our feet in the dirt, and our ears in heaven. And now you're listening to Sexy in Van City on CITR 101.9 FM, the middle of your dial, but first in your heart. I'm Dave from Chips with Everything on Sundays at 5, filling in for Caroline. She's busy working on Beauty Night tonight, so she isn't able to be here as much as she'd like to be. But she will be back next week, so have no fear. And this is a thrill for me to be a part of the show. I had a erotic art gallery about 8 years ago and a little toy company called Lollipop, where sweetness was guaranteed. So being on the more empowered side of sex rather than just the fun and game side is a big thrill for me. So we opened the show with a 1971 jazzy cover of Led Zepp's Whole Lotta Love, performed by CCS, which is, I think, as good a tune as any to start with. Tonight we're talking about how food and health affect sexuality and interact with sexuality. And our guest tonight is Kim Anami. And she's here in mind, body, and soul. She's the founder and director of Bodacious Life Coaching. And she is, in fact, a sex coach. Good night, Kim. Good evening, Kim.
Good evening.
Good night comes later, I guess.
A good night can come anytime.
Yeah, I'm sure. So how are you doing?
I'm fantastic. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, no, it's great having you here. So before we get started about tonight's topic, let's talk a bit about you and what you do.
What I do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, or even go back a bit further. What did you have an aha moment? You've talked in a couple things I've looked at about having a need for a deeper approach to sex, that, you know, we generally need that. What I mean, was there an epiphany? Was it over time? Did this come to you? Like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Well, to start out, I'm a life coach and I'm a sex and relationship coach. And so I do a variety of coaching in terms of all parts of people's lives, and like from health, fitness, recreation, career, finance. And then I also have a really strong focus in sex and intimacy. And the reason for that being is that I've always felt that that's a very important and powerful piece of anybody's life. And we live in a culture where often that's actually considered an incidental piece of someone's relationship or their life, despite the fact that we have a culture that's very sex focused. It's kind of a strange double message. So a lot of the work that I do is helping to reunite that dichotomy in people. And so when you ask about the depth, or, you know, why I take a deeper approach, it's about really trying to fire people up from the inside. So trying to ignite, I guess, their innate lover, which I believe that we all have, and try to get into the why of sex. So when people often have sexual blocks, it's not enough to just give them techniques like, okay, if you put your hand here, this will work better. And if you put your mouth here, that'll work better. That's icing on the cake. But what really changes people and gets them to another place in their development is to get deeper. Like, why do you not like doing that? What's going on for you? And then how to shift it. Try to get people to actually fall in love with what they're doing and enjoy it. So they're not just doing it to be a gracious partner, but they're doing it because they love doing it. And oral sex is a really good example of that. Say, if you have a woman who doesn't really enjoy oral sex very much, it's trying to find ways to really get her to love doing that. So she's not doing it as a duty, because we all know that I think that's one of the most best examples of an act where you can truly feel whether your partner's enjoying it or not. And half, or even more than half, of your experience comes from their enthusiasm, and they're absolutely loving what they're doing, right?
Yeah,
and if you
100%.
Feel like someone is just going at it because it's a duty, then you're probably not going to enjoy it very much yourself either.
Right.
So I'm trying to get deeper into the core of what really fires people up and gets them on board, mind, body, and soul.
That's great. Well, actually, since we're talking about, not to get too much into it right away, but when it comes to blowjobs, I mean, do you have a pretty good success rate with getting people to cross on over to the other side? Pardon the pun.
Well, I think so, because often after, like, I do this one salon, it's like a workshop salon that I run called The Art of Pleasuring a Man.
Oh, no, you've got one of the, I know that you didn't say that to plug yourself, but that's coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
It is. It's actually...
It's ongoing?
Or? It is ongoing, yeah. Okay. This next one is full, but there'll be more coming up. But what I'll have sometimes is I'll get a husband call me the next day and just say, thank you.
Wow.
Or, you know, honey, where did that come from? You know, like, my wife suddenly did this that she'd never done before, and they're like, actually, I have a really good story. So a couple that I know, the wife came to one to that salon, and that night she went home and she played with her husband's G-spot and she swallowed his ejaculate. And he's like, oh my God, like, where is this all coming from? And she's like, well, Kim said it was good for us. And it looks like it was good for him, too. So it's really win-win.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's got to be a hell of a lift to know that you're doing that with your professional time.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I'm excited to get other people excited, you know. And like I said, the deepest satisfaction is feeling like they've really shifted something in themselves. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we only go around once, you know. Pardon everybody who might think otherwise, but... something like the idea of being able to take your sex life, whether you think it's vanilla or hot or whatever, and really, really get everything you can out of it. It's never too late, is it?
Well, it's never too late, and there's always more to learn. Like, even, you know, I have clients who come to me and they already have, you know, they would rate it as an 11 out of 10 sex life, and they want to know how to make it even better. And those are the people who are going to be having fantastic sex for the rest of their lives, because they're always putting attention on it. How can we make it even better? So I think it's totally possible that you can have a long-term relationship that's full of passionate, incredible, thriving sex, but it takes putting attention on it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was actually my other question before we get to tonight's topic. And that was in your website and elsewhere, you connect making sex and the creative process, both daily or near daily activities, and you connect the two of them. And, you know, it takes, there's some work there that you have to do. And I'm curious, I think it plays into what you're talking about, is having this incredible sex. But why are the two so importantly linked together for you?
Well, for me, there's two aspects that link the two together. I feel like our sexual energy, our life force energy, our libido is actually not just our sex drive. It's energy that we... basically infuse into all parts of our lives. And so we think it might just be confined to our relationship, but there was in Freudian and Jungian psychology, they define libido as the individual's psychic energy, the steps that they take to self-actualize. So it's how you actually express yourself in the world. So your sexual energy is creative energy, and if you think about it, that energy is actually creating new life, right? And if you're not making babies with that energy,
right,
you can channel it into other parts of your life consciously by thinking about it. And even there's certain very simple tantric and Taoist breathing exercises that you can do to do that even more. So that's one part, how I link creativity and sexual energy. And the other piece, like, I wrote a blog post, I think it was yesterday, about creativity and sexuality. The link is that you want to create momentum with the two of them. So say you have a creative part of your life, you're a writer or a painter, any creative project that you're working on, it moves forward by you putting, you know, if not daily attention, almost daily attention on it. It's like Newton's first law of motion, that something, when it's standing still, it will continue to stand still. Once it's in motion, it will continue to move. So the more energy that you've built up and that you've created this space that you're committed to that work, it'll take on a life and a momentum of its own. So it'll start to carry you, right? So your creative projects will start to give back to you. You'll be excited. I fall in love with my creative projects. I talk to people sometimes when they're not in an intimate relationship where they have a sexual outlet, that they can redirect that energy into their creative projects or into their life at large. And then if you apply that to your relationship, it's the same thing. Like, if you put daily attention to connecting with your partner emotionally and connecting to them physically or sexually, that you will continue, that space starts to build and it creates a life of its own. Or you can think of it like going from freezing to boiling, right? If you manage to keep your sex life and your creative life at a simmer, so like a 5 or a 6 or a 7, it's not hard to make it to a 10 or a 15. But if you have to go from 0 to 10, you basically have to melt ice, right? So I tell people you never should let your sex life or your creative life drop past a five. You always want to keep some kind of energy in it. And really, all it takes is some attention daily. I don't think it's a hard thing to do. It might seem daunting when you feel like you're at a negative five.
Right.
And you need to get back up on that horse. And that's the hardest part, actually, is the initial work if you have lost momentum.
And I think part of that for a lot of people is the idea that they're allowed to devote that much time to something, which for a lot of people, sadly, I think feels self-indulgent, when in fact it's absolutely vital. I personally, I think, you know, the more attention you put into that very core part of your life, the better you're going to be to your, I don't know, your postal worker, your kids, your community, yourself, you know?
Totally. And I think you expressed that really well, is that I also believe it's a vital part of our lives and a vital part of our relationships. And I think that's also, as a life coach, what I often see with people is that that part of somebody's life, their intimacy, their relationship part, when that part is doing really well, it spills out and many, you know, all the other parts of their lives tend to be lifted by that piece. Yet when that part's not doing well, it sucks everything else down into it like a vortex, right? And so I think because in our culture there is that, you know, not wanting, like you said, self-indulgent, like if you put too much time on it, oh, that's not really that important, which also comes with this sexual suppression that we
have, right? Yeah. Well, this is great. Well, what I'd like to do is shift right into tonight's topic. Now, I said top of the show is, you know, how food and health affect our sexuality. What would you say tonight's topic is? is that as good as a topic title as any?
Well, you know, when you think about that, it sounds on the surface like it's not that interesting, but let's just, you know, kind of get people engaged by telling them we'll be talking about the cum diet. And
what else do you got? I mean, if you're gonna, starting with that, that's pretty impressive.
Well, that's to come. We want to keep people engaged, right? So
Okay. We'll
start with, what I think makes an amazing lover. Like, you know, that's often an ultimate question, is how do you become an amazing lover? And, you know, my answer to that is that it's not just about learning technique, that technique's a really small part of that, that the way we become amazing lovers is really getting in tune with ourselves. And when you're really in tune with yourself, you can be very in tune with another person. And then you can read them. And then you're dancing. You have this organic, flowing, spontaneous dance between you.
I've got just the song from The Oz. Speaking of the perfect lover, this is one coming out from their latest album, The Oz Nation, Spock Shock.
Sha-la-la-la-la. Sha-la-la-la-la. Sha-la-la. Ooh, it's not the one who's ranked above. It's the first officer that I love. His pointy ears are super sexy. Sweet as Falkenstein fruit. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I love a man named Spock, and that's the Vulcan truth. His hairy chest is what I like. He's more handsome than Christopher Pike. I pretend to pass out so he carries me. I can't wait 7 years for Kuna Kelly. Because my thoughts are usually of sexual relations. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I love a man named Spock, and that's the Vulcan truth.
All right. Well, thank you. That was the Oz doing their thing, which is always wonderful to hear. And by the way, the Oz are going to be performing this Saturday night, May 21st at 10 o'clock at the studio. Use the rear entrance. I thought you'd like that. And at 440 West Pender, the studio. If you've been there before, it's a good time. It's going to be backed up by some of Van City's greatest exemplars of Abyss Disco, Grunge Rave, and other obscure, likely made-up micro-music genres. And Miami Mice. There'll be some other folks playing too. BYOB, yes, that's right. And it's a $5 cover to cover, you know, bigger amps and things like that. You are listening to Sexy in Van City. Caroline is not here tonight, but I'm filling in here. I'm Dave from Chips with Everything. It's 10:25 here at 101.9 FM up at UBC. And we're here with Kim, Bodacious Life Coach. And
hola.
Yeah, hola. And let's get to it. I got to say, out of all the mini topics we're talking about, I want to get right to the cum diet. I think that is, for me anyway, I'm shocked but not surprised that it sounds like a good idea to eat cum to make yourself feel better, among other things.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I always liked eating cum, and part of it came out of... It was experiential, really. Like, I've been studying Taoism and tantric sexuality for a long time, like nearly 20 years. And, one of the things they talk about with men is that their ejaculate's a real power source and energy source. And they often encourage men to conserve it, or use techniques to draw that energy back into them. And so I would try to, coach my lovers in this. Well, you should learn this. Because for one, I really wanted them to be able to have sex with me for longer. That was my ulterior motive.
Right.
And,
More on
coming too quickly.
More on Viagra and alternatives there too in a little bit. Go on.
And so I'd say, well, if you really don't want it, then you please give it to me, right? So I can absorb it myself. And I found through careful observation that by ingesting a lot of ejaculate, or even one dose of ejaculate, I would get giddy. I felt euphoric. I got really high off of this substance, and I thought, wow, this is fantastic.
So putting the E in ejaculate is what you're saying.
Oh yeah, that's great. That's a great little. I like that. And then I later read in other Taoist and tantric philosophy that they consider that men and women inject their feminine and masculine essence into their cum, into their saliva, into their lubricating fluid, so that when you get sexually aroused, you start to inject this or infuse this very concentrated elixir. So as a man, you would have this masculine essence that if we're kissing, we're exchanging, I'm picking up some of your yang essence and you would be getting some of my yin essence. So it's a very rebalancing experience. So I was aware of that. And then I read not too long ago about a study that was done by a fellow called Dr. Gordon Gallup. And he found that non-contracepting women, so women who are not taking hormonal birth control, when they were absorbing semen, it was acting as an antidepressant.
Now, first of all, that blows my mind. But when you...
Really hard to not sound like everything sounds sexual when you start talking about sex.
Yeah, I know. I know the double entendre
blows my mind.
I know. It just doesn't stop. Yeah. I know. But you said absorb. So does that mean not just swallowing it, but just through intercourse too?
Yes. Yeah, I think the studies were done through vaginal absorption, and then he's doing more research to just confirm. Like he said, in theory, it would still absorb through the large intestine, you'd still get the same impact, but I think he was doing further research to really kind of nail that.
Anal, oral.
Yeah,
wow.
And I thought that was, absolutely fantastic. So I started doing lectures on the cum diet, and you can imagine it was quite a popular topic.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I did a lecture at a health food store on Commercial Drive, Health on the Drive, and afterward, this 66-year-old woman came up to me, and she's like, I love to eat my husband's cum. it's not just for the young and adventurous, it's for the everyone and adventurous and the open-minded.
Wonderful.
So that's one piece of the cum diet, is the antidepressant effect. But basically, like the whole, when I do that lecture, I talk about the, the impact, like everyone should be having more cum and eating more cum, meaning orgasms are also extremely healthy for you. Like you have this incredible rise and release of neurotransmitters throughout the process, like dopamine, and then you have like oxytocin release, which makes you feel more relaxed and content. And women, the more sex they have, the more estrogen they produce. So their hair gets shiny, their skin gets really smooth and healthy looking. And both men and women, the more sex that you have, the more pheromones you radiate. And the more pheromones you radiate, the more sex offers you receive. So people want to fuck you when you're having lots of sex.
You know, from personal experience, having been in the desert and then hitting the oasis, it's, you know, it's anecdotal, but completely true. You know?
So describe that. What do you mean by being in the desert and hitting the oasis?
Oh, well, being in the desert is 6 months without sex. You know, while single, which is a very long time, aggressively single. And then...
aggressively single.
Yeah. And then from that, basically can't beat him off with a shitty stick.
So once you started having sex, you mean?
Yeah, it was incredible. Right. Where it got to the point, I remember, you know, one Valentine's Day, three different women, you know, it was the start, like being an air traffic controller trying to organize myself. And before that, it was, as I say, I could do anything, and I was anything and everything possible to make that connection, and it just wasn't there. And it got more and more desperate, and the response was more and more negative over time.
Right.
So that I never thought why that would be. I just thought they could smell. Actually, it's funny. Yeah. I used to say you could smell desperation.
Yeah.
And I thought it was more something in you, the way you might carry yourself, but you're saying it's way more pheromonal.
Well, it's I think it's both. Like, I think you radiate a whole body energy when you've been well-loved and well-fucked. And, you know, here we go back to that's the momentum thing again, too, right? The more sex you have, the more you want to have, the more people want to have it with you, you know, and you just radiate a whole other sense of well-being.
Now, there's one other thing that we talked about before going on the show, and you said that it's an antidepressant, you know, people should eat more cum. Now, this is something that a lot of guys, I think, at least in my little world, might have, maybe they have trouble with, I don't know, but you said exchanging cum as well. Now, so when you were saying that, maybe I missed the boat. Are you talking about, you know, trading ejaculate by mouth, or are you talking about just...
Not that men would absorb their own... Is that what you mean?
I meant
that, like, men and women, they balance each other out by... this is from the Taoist philosophy. So they're all about yin and yang and male and female. So my personal, you know, philosophy is that all orientations and directions are, you know, perfectly acceptable and fantastic. When I reference Taoist philosophy, obviously they're talking about yin and yang. And I think even in this Gordon Gallup study that he was doing, he studied some homosexual men and found that they also benefited from absorbing each other's semen. But back to the Taoist, like, so... I mean, I think this would work both hetero and homosexual relationships, but from that tantric Taoist perspective, it was like I've seen these basically artifacts. Like, there's this 16th century Japanese woodcut, and this man, he's depicted, he's performing oral sex on a woman, and he has this container, this ejaculate collecting bowl beneath her, and then it's dripping into the bowl. So he's collecting it as this elixir, right? So it's considered, and in tantra they call it amrita, or the female blessing. Like, when the woman ejaculates, the men should try to absorb that because it's considered this very potent elixir. So yeah, in that sense, it definitely goes both ways.
Wow. Well, I'm thrilled to be learning all this stuff from you, I gotta say.
Well, it's great. You know, there's also all kinds of nutrients and hormones and vitamins in ejaculate. So I really think if women, you know, fuck the South Beach diet and the zone diet. Like, seriously, everyone should be on the cum diet.
Now, about cum and the way it tastes, the sort of the cliche that I know from my circle is that drink lots of pineapple juice. It makes your ejaculate taste sweet. If it tastes good, they're going to want it more. Is that, I mean, in terms of how does, this is sort of segueing a little bit, I guess, into diet in terms of what you eat.
Yeah.
How does what you eat affect your sex life, you know? I mean, obviously, in something as simple as the way it makes you smell, the way it makes you taste, those sorts of things. So if I'm going to be, smoking cigarettes and having sirloin stew and drinking scotch for breakfast, that's not going to be quite the same as if I'm a vegan, standing on my head. And
absolutely, the vegetarian partners I've had definitely had very mild tasting ejaculate, so I think diet absolutely plays a factor in that. And then I remember being with a carnivore and he had much stronger tasting ejaculate. But I'm going to stray, we'll come back to the kind of like things you can do with your health, but to go a bit deeper with that, I really think that when you are absorbing someone or swallowing their essence, their ejaculate, their cum, their sweat, their blood, everything, that it's about how much you truly accept and have opened yourself to that person. And I think if the relationship, it reflects how deep you've really gone, like how emotionally open, how surrendered you are, how vulnerable you are, how much you truly care for that person. To me, it's a barometer, is then you would love eating to devour every part of them. And I think when you have resistance or you're actually not really that into that person, then that shows, like your body doesn't lie. It feels repulsed. It doesn't actually want to absorb that. So you might be mentally telling yourself that, you want to do this thing, but your body's like, uh-uh. I really don't. And until you reconcile that, I think when you do reconcile it, then it'll become easy to do those things. And if you never reconcile it, well, you could stay together and just suffer, or you end it. So that's something I try to get people to look at. When that's going into the why, right? Mm. It's like, okay, yeah, you can go eat pineapple, drink pineapple juice, but and that could help. But there's a deeper question there, right? Is like, why don't I want to just devour and absorb every inch of you?
Right.
And when I know for myself, when I've been really, really, really into someone, that's exactly what I want to do. Mm. I can't keep my hands off them. I can't keep my mouth off them. Yeah. I want their sweat. Like, I want them to go exercise, as this olfactory foreplay,
there's that famous the famous note that Napoleon sends to says, right. I'll be back in 3 days, don't bathe, right?
Yeah, it's, well, that's being honest, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
So you were asking about like diet and exercise and how that might affect.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Taste. Well, and just, yeah, more broadly, I mean, we could talk cum all night. Believe me, I'd be happy to. Is it good for the skin? That kind of stuff.
I find it a little bit dry, actually.
Right. Yeah. Getting away from that and to diet, is there a sort of a top 10? Things to eat, things you don't eat? Is there hard and fast rules about it?
I think that if you are someone, you sort of were giving that exaggerated example of someone who sounds like they're pretty unhealthy. They smoke and they drink and they're toxic and you have a lot of toxins in your body, you actually stink. You radiate an odor that's unpleasant because you're full of toxins and you're not flushing them out of your system. So in an ideal situation or ideal person, they have a healthy diet. They're eating a lot of whole foods, a lot of fresh fruit and vegetables, actual real food that came from the ground, or a creature, and then they're flushing things out of their system. So we live in a city, we live in a polluted environment, right? Or we're ingesting pollutants at the same time. So we need some kind of regimen, either through herbs or supplements or exercise, to keep flushing our system so that they're taking, our body, I think, can handle, a certain amount of toxins. It's designed to.
Of course.
But if we overload it, then you get that impact of overweight and you stink and, you're sort of almost sending a message that you don't want someone to get close to you.
So if you're going to look at, there are superfoods out there for general purposes. Are there any sort of sexual superfoods, or are there any particular things or combination of things that people should eat either for curative purpose or to sort of, if you're at a decent baseline, let's say you eat you're a Vancouverite, you look after yourself, right, that sort of thing. Is there a direction you would send people, specific things they should be grabbing from the produce section for eating, that is, as opposed to for eating and playing? I don't care.
There was a study done recently, actually, by, I think it was at Guelph University, and they compiled all the research they could find about different aphrodisiacs. And the conclusive results that they found in terms of natural or herbal aphrodisiacs were saffron, the spice, is considered to be very powerful, ginseng,
That's that's one we've heard before.
Yep. And yohimbe, which is the bark off of a tree that's found in Africa. That's really, really quite strong. So those were the three main ones that they found. And they said that the idea that chocolate, no, they said it really didn't. They said, like, you might get some kind of reaction in your brain, like of serotonin or endorphins that make you feel good. And maybe you feel like a little more relaxed and open, but it actually didn't create arousal. So that was a myth. Maca. The South American plant, it's a herb that's also, they found that that was considered an aphrodisiac, or created arousal in people. So for actual herbal aphrodisiacs, and I'm, you know, really of the mindset that people, well, one should be finding out how to arouse themselves from within. So how, you know, what turns you on in your life, in your sex life? Like, that's the question you really need to ask instead of grabbing a pill.
Sure.
And if you want to kickstart that, though, because say you've been in a slump for a long time, you want to remind yourself and feel like, what does it actually feel like to be turned on again, right? So using a herbal aphrodisiac, I think, can kickstart that. And if you've had some neural pathways that have been created because you've been in this rut for a long time, then you can change them. So those are curative, they're restorative, and they're not addictive. And I, you know, as a practicing sex coach, I do not let any of my clients use Viagra. I actually steer women away even from vaginal lubricants because...
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, that's interesting. The Viagra I could see, you know.
Yep.
But
what's the difference?
Between the one and the other?
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. I never thought of it before. I just thought of lubricant being... Well, I guess we're talking about vaginal sex, but for anal sex?
Oh, definitely.
That's another matter.
Sex.
Okay, sure.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess when it comes to vaginal intercourse, I never thought about it as so much dealing with a more, like, it's what you're talking about, the deeper approach to sex. I never thought about it as a profound problem so much as a, you know, some people have dry skin, some people have greasy hair, some people, you know, they don't lubricate up as much. But of course, I can hear that's precisely what I expect you to say.
Yeah, that's true.
The opposite is true.
I think it's just easier to hide it, right? With a man, if he doesn't have an erection, you're going to be pretty... Yeah, exactly. It's going to be pretty difficult to pretend that's not an issue. With a woman, you know, you can kind of fake it. Like, if she's not fully lubricated, you can still do it, you know, but it might not be that pleasant, but you could kind of, or you could use some, you know, saliva, I guess, in a pinch. But it seems like you could sort of pretend almost that that's not an issue. And for some reason, this idea is out there that, oh, you know, as a liberated woman, you'd have your lube and you just, you know, use the lube and that'll solve the problem. But I, you know, it kind of occurred to me at one point, like, that's not a solution, is it? Like, it's really, to me, it's just the same as taking Viagra.
You're masking
exactly.
It's a symptom. Why cover up a symptom?
Exactly. And so the deeper issue, I mean, you could consciously override it, right? Say you haven't, you know, you've been in a long distance relationship and you haven't seen your partner in, like, you know, 10 weeks, and you guys get together and you want to have sex for 10 hours. And if you want to consciously use the lubricant because after 10 hours, you just, your body's really not keeping up, you know, then consciously override it. But if it's an ongoing issue, then yeah, I want to know then what's turning you on. Like, I wrote this blog post, it was a couple of weeks ago, about mind fucking. And I said, like, the ultimate mind fucking is when someone's deeply penetrating you, right? They're opening you up. They're exposing you. They're making you feel seen and cherished and adored and held, right? In a very deep, profound way. That's the most powerful mind fucking. And, you know, I've been mind fucked, you know, like, up and down the room and been, like, soaking wet and totally lubricated without someone even touching me.
Wow.
And that's a lot. Like, I consider that to be a norm in my relationship. Right, that's the way it should be.
I was talking to a friend about this, actually, this very thing earlier today, and she said, "Well," and I suppressed surprise. I just did now, and she said, "Well, of course." I then had to point out to her that she's not your average cookie. You know, that not every woman is going to have that strong and wonderfully powerful a response without even being touched. You know, I could be wrong anecdotally, but that's. That doesn't seem standard fare. I mean, to the degree that you're describing it, right? You know, that just through a mind. Well, I guess if you're already going down the path that you're saying you're having a mind fucking session, that if that's what's already happening, then yeah, you'd expect it to be pretty hot.
Well, but it's, and it's, but I guess, like, let me clarify, it's not even talking about sex. Like, it's not like we were having sex talk and then that got me wet. It was just by really deeply connecting to another person.
Oh, I didn't get that part. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
So it's not like phone sex or, you know, across the room sex. It's like we could be, well, it could be any of those things, but the point is that it's actually just the energy of really connecting deeply to someone and feeling naked and exposed and totally turned on by that, you know, with that person. And I'm talking metaphorically naked, metaphorically exposed, right? Not physically.
Okay. Yeah.
So those are the precursors that I'm trying to get to with people. And so in the work that I do and the salons that I do, I spend a lot of time on why and trying to fire people up from the inside, right? So these are keys that I see that unlock people, right? Mm. And this is what I'm presenting, like, as ways that might open you.
And before, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, among other things, if we have time, I would like to talk a little bit. Maybe you could walk through something that might happen at one of the salons. We're here at 101.9 FM CITR at Sexy in Van City. And here's another little tune for you.
I want to have sex without the regrets, but I can't do it because I always sleep with some creep just to prove it. I know that you really loved me. My emotions were too clumsy. I'll let them tie me up and then I'll cut them loose. Romance is what I want.
Someone must have nailed us together. It's a mess.
Here we are. It's 10 to 11. You're listening to Sexy in Van City. I'm Dave. It's 101.9 FM CITR up here at UBC. We're here with Kim Anami. Yeah?
Hello.
Full points. Bodacious life and sex coach. No, she's a sex coach. Bodacious life. Bodacious living. Come on, work with me.
All of the above. You're doing fine. It's all of
it. Good. Yeah. I think it's, is it bodaciousliving.com?
It's bodaciouslifecoaching.com.
There it is. Bodaciouslifecoaching.com. I took a look, and believe me, it's well worth checking out. You learn a lot. So when we took our break, and I should mention that we were just listening to is another tune by The Oz, Ugly Side from The Oz Nation. And what you just heard was Someone Must Have Nailed Us Together, a reissue.
Aww.
Yeah, great, eh? Great. I think it's a classic tune. Len Bright combo. Great stuff. So before we left, we mentioned we're going to just carry on with birth control. So before getting into the salons, which is fascinating to me, let's talk birth control. And we've talked a bit already about on the aphrodisiac side, you know, Yohimbe versus Viagra, you know, sort of a Band-Aid versus a curative mm-hmm. approach.
Yeah.
So birth control, natural, pharmaceutical.
Well, there's, you know, such a huge strong arm movement by pharmaceutical companies in general, right? And that extends into birth control. And when you think about it, every other single female of every other species on the planet shows visible signs of when they are ovulating, when they're in estrus, right? And women are no different. We do too. We just haven't, we've been told that it's too risky, or people don't even tell us that that's an option. And so there are methods out there where women can very, very, very easily chart their own fertility. It's really obvious once you know what to look for. For example, women can test or just observe their cervical mucus. Most women can feel like some changing throughout the month of how much they discharge vaginally.
Right.
And if you pay attention to it, you actually see there's a pattern. And then once you know how to identify the pattern, you can chart exactly when you're fertile and exactly when you're not. Even the position of the cervix, it changes throughout the month. Like it comes up and down, and you can use that too as a guide. So there's a method called the Billings method, and we're actually having a sort of certified Billings instructor coming to Health on the Drive, which is that health food store I did the Come Diet talk at.
When's that going to be?
I believe it's June the 14th, and there's information on my website.
Good.
And so she'll be there to talk about that. But there's, you know, the World Health Organization in 2005 actually classified the birth control pill as a group 1 carcinogen. So it's the highest level of carcinogenicity?
Yes, sure.
Whatever it's called. You know that, when people get cancer. So it's in the same category as asbestos and radium. It's
my
like,
God.
It's pretty serious shit. And but doctors just keep doling this out. And there have been incredible studies that basically link You know, cancer increase to taking the birth control. Like the Mayo Clinic did a study where they said that basically in women who are pre-pregnancy, they have a 50% increased chance of getting cancer, breast cancer, through taking the birth control pill. There was a Swedish oncologist who did a study, published a study that women at, before the age of 20 have a 1,000% increased chance of getting breast cancer. It's insane. These are absolutely brutal statistics. And, you know, women are kind of scared into this position thinking like, oh, it's so easy to get pregnant. It's actually not. There's only a handful of days during the month when you can get pregnant.
You know, it's funny you
really
say that.
It's easy to figure out what they are.
You know, because speaking from experience, there was that one time on Debbie Timko's kitchen floor that produced my sweet daughter, Amanda. The one in time ever, my entire life, except for the very first time, you know, there was no protection. And boom, there is Amanda. 5 years later, five solid years, and you're quite right that the more you do it, the more you do it. Five solid years of fucking, and finally a baby came out of it. The second time around, it was very, very difficult. So you bet it's hard to get knocked up. But I'm curious about something. You said, you know, there's only a few days. I mean, how many, if you're using, let's say, something like the Billings method, right? How many days off? I mean, I realize there's other things you can do, right?
But, exactly. So there would be, if you had, if you're abstaining from vaginal intercourse, like it's roughly 7 days. Like there's, where you would abstain. So you can have anal sex, you can have oral sex.
Great.
If you want, I mean, in the Billings method, they actually suggest that you don't use condoms because they think it will obscure the mucus reading, so it would make it harder to read it.
Besides, you know, you know,
your choice. Like that's the by the book Billings method, and you know, you can play with that as you wish. And if you come to the talk, you can ask the person who, you know, instructs in it, right? But there to follow the method precisely would mean that you would abstain from vaginal intercourse.
Well, I'm really glad that you said you don't have to abstain from anal, oral, you know, mutual, manual.
Yeah.
Because I remember a friend who was came back for Catholic, and she, it was the rhythm method, which maybe is not as bang on as the Billings.
Kinda,
it's related, though. It's
yes.
cervical mucus.
Yeah.
And is taught by a couple of lovely, you know, middle-class, middle-aged Catholic housewives out in the prairies. And somebody said, well, what do you do during this, in this period? That's why I couldn't remember how long it was. Yeah, I think it was about a week.
Yeah.
And she said, well, I bake muffins.
Oh my!
To which my friend immediately said, "God, he must really get to hate the sound of muffin tins." Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, yeah. So that's great. So there's the Billings method,
yep.
And you don't die; you live.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing.
You know?
That. Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Incredible. Just incredible. I had no idea. I knew it was bad. I knew there was increased risks, but...
Well, to me, my personal belief is that that's why you see all these women with these crazy fertility issues, right? That women are in their 30s and they're not getting pregnant. It's because they've been on the pill for 10, 15 years. Right?
And that's a big thing. And of course, there's also a lot of really serious issues with hormone mimicking plastics. You know, I mean, when you've got fish in the Great Lakes, male fish turning female, you know, there's something wrong with, you know, what people are enjoying. We're very lucky here when it comes to our water. It comes from the heavens above, lands in a mountain, we get to drink it. I mean, there's still chlorine, but relatively speaking, our water's okay. But still, there's stuff coming in from all angles. So, wow. So, there you have it, folks. Put away the bacon, the baking tins when you're using the Billings method and just have other kinds of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, your salons. This is something that I'm really keen on because as a relatively vanilla person who'd love to ramp things up in a lot of directions, not just in terms of, you know, putting on a chicken suit and swinging upside down, although that's great. The right? It's the... What you call it repeatedly, the deeper approach, the putting your whole being into sex. And for a lot of people, having their hand held and getting walked through it, I think, would be the most sensible, well, the most natural way to go once they get over their initial shyness. So you walk into a salon, one of your salons. What's it look like for me? You know, I show up there. I decide after listening to the show to give it a go. And I'm there, let's say, with my partner. What do I see when I walk through the door?
Well, you'd see me greeting you and in some kind of cocktail dress, and I'd probably give you a hug and a kiss.
Aww.
And then I would bring you inside, and you would find a space that's set up like a Moroccan tent, I guess.
Great.
Like, I have all these sheepskins thrown everywhere, beautiful silk pillows and tables, like low-lying tables, so everyone's on the floor, and candles, and then I would get you some organic wine. I'd ask what you'd like, and then you would have some, there's all kinds of sushi that's laid out, and then I have a friend, she's a she runs a company called Tanabata Tea Chocolates, and she makes these aphrodisiac chocolates. She's a master herbalist, and so they have ginseng and maca and these, you know, these products that we just talked about in the chocolates. And so you'd be sampling the chocolates, and then we'd all get settled in, and then you know, my intention with the salons is to create a space for people to learn and discover. And so I, you know, I talked about trying to find keys to unlock people, so I use these ideas as themes to start conversations, and then I will present some ideas for people, and then I want to hear, like, what do you want to know? Like, what are your burning questions about sex? What are everyone's burning questions about sex? And then it's so liberating to be in a group of people and have that kind of open discussion, because there's really nowhere in our culture that you can do that. And so, you know, when they really get going and the flow happens, people share about their own experiences. Like, there was a woman at my last salon, and she actually had her cervix removed. Mm. And, you know, in the Taoist philosophy, women can get what we call a cervical orgasm, which is a very, very deep, intense, you know, almost like a spiritual type of orgasm, very, very powerful. And she said in the first couple of years after having her cervix removed, she wasn't able to, she was, you know, had to really work through that trauma and physical pain, and then become more open to that. And then she said after a couple of years with her partner, they worked at it, and she actually had a cervical orgasm even though she didn't have a cervix anymore. Which,
wow.
I know, which was phenomenal, right?
Wow.
Like, these are, and then, and this is, you know, a theme that comes up in my work too, about sexual energy. Like, it's not so much, you know, physical touching and mechanics, but this is like, they were able to recreate an experience that she'd already had in her body and her neural wiring, and she was able to reactivate it.
Yeah. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
You know,
so people share that kind of depth, right? That comes up where people, like, how many people would share that? Where would you really hear that kind of, you know?
And that's a question I have, as I'm trying to paint myself as a regular Joe, but of course I'm not. I've already, had businesses at least involving sex, so pretty open. But what about, do you get sort of a, I don't know, your average person, you know, the average person off the street, do you get them in your salons and you see them having these transformative experiences? Or if the fact is it sort of like, they're already, the fact that they're already coming to your salon means they're already at an 8 out of 10 sort of thing?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, there are people that are there, but there's all range of people. Like, you know, I might start working with a couple who hasn't had sex in a long time, right? Or, you know, they've had issues that have been going on for a while, and they would probably say they're at a 0 or a 1, mm. right? And so my work is to bring them back to life, either, you know, privately in my work with them, or someone might just want to get their feet wet and, you know, come to a salon. And so you have the option at the salon to really just sit back and observe. And if you want to ask a question, you don't have to share your whole life and experience behind the question. You can just ask a question. And then whatever wisdom is in the room collectively might answer that question. And, you know, of course, I would jump in if I felt like there was something that I could offer. But the whole process is about trying to ignite people from the inside, right? And something happens, there's like a catalyst in the room when you have people that are opening up on that level, like emotionally, and they're kind of loosening up even physically, right? We're talking about sex, there's some wine, there's some chocolate, there's some aphrodisiacs in the room.
Right.
I have sexy images, like I have a bit of, I put some images up as we talk about things that kind of stimulate or represent the theme. Like, I talk about, you know, falling in love with your partner's genitals, and I have a photograph of this woman who is so enamored with her lover's cock. Like, she's got her face pressed up against his hard-on, like, that's, you know, showing through his underwear. And, like, even the photographs people often comment on, because I've searched out these pictures that are really beautifully, like, erotic, but they're tasteful at the same time, right? And there's very...
Although there's, I'm sure you'd agree there's nothing wrong with being tastelessly erotic, too.
Yeah, the whole gamut is totally permissible, sure. But I find that it's really nice to find a niche of imagery out there that's both. It's aesthetically beautiful.
Well, yeah, you don't want to
really
throw, yeah, you don't, yeah, you don't want to throw a roadblock up, just, you know, one person's, I don't know, shaved midget is another person's perversion, right?
Totally. One person's, you know, outrageous is another person's timid.
Sure.
So, but I do try to provoke a little bit, right? I want to wake people up, and I want them to be thinking about things in a different way, right? In a positive way. I want to try to remove any blocks that they have and get them more open. And so, you know, people often say to me that they go home that night and they try something out. They might try to find their partner's G-spot, whether it's a woman or a man. There's an exercise that I do in my couple's salon. It's just a very simple tantric breathing exercise, and this is something that a couple can do, you know, any night, that I encourage people to do as they go to bed, where you basically, you